there's something about when you actually hear someone reading out those bios. It's one thing sending them off on an email, but when you hear them read out, you think, oh God, I sound so deliberately pompous. But anyway, maybe that's true. I'll read all poems from the new book, and if I ramble on too long, just hit me over the head with a hammer or something. This is a poem about my tendency always to think that bad things are going to happen in the future, hence the cover of the book, maybe, called Foreboding. Once more the endless Monday to Sunday and back round again, the days content mostly just to be a small dog peeing against the same old tree. So why then do you get the feeling that the future is about to leap at you, like a baboon with a hatchet from a manhole or a closet, screaming something which can only mean this is the end of the old regime? The next one is a poem about... We went on for a weekend in August 2006 to Kilkee in Clare, and during that time, we had no television there in the place we were staying, but this news came over that the MI5 had discovered this plot to blow up 20 planes in Heathrow or whatever, and there was something very strange about hearing that, and there was a crackling on a radio in a seaside town, and you don't know what to believe. It could be true, it could be completely invented. And I looked out the window, there was a guy going up and down the beach with a metal detector. He actually did that every day, which was a bit strange. And I said, pointed out and said, well, he's definitely working for them, whoever they are. This is the great escape. For 4 days in August to this place of novelty haircuts and surrealist sandcastles, in weather that once spelt socialist summer camp, you watch a lone goose move high across the water. Imagine the wetsuits popping one by one from a distant rock, or a cult come here to commit mass suicide. Kilkee, host town to Uzbekistan, a B&B run by a guy you're sure is ex-Romanian army, to go the Chinese takeaway, fry up all day until 3. You could do this. Whittle yourself a pipe from a piece of driftwood, spend the wide autumn evening smoking it, let the terrorists in the television take over the airports, just whitter away about how the man with a metal detector who prowls the beach each afternoon is definitely working for them. Now, people have remarked that 3 themes emerge in my poems, or 3 of them. 3 of them are Tuesday afternoons, mildew, and bareback sides, often in combination. And apologies to Trace, who's heard this poem many times before. It's about when you reach my time of life, which is just nudging over the 40. You spend a lot of time with your friends talking about the divorces that they will have or the divorces that they won't have. They just talk about them. And this is Tuesday. You arrive home, she's away, and you think, I'm going to have a quiet evening, but no. Tuesday. Her still away in the town, all east winds and tonsillitis, as you come back for a quiet night in, not playing with yourself, but instead get the loud catastrophe of a friend whose wife finally told him, time for Teletubby fuck-off, meowing on your garage roof. Hours then of him determined to see nothing in the coffee cup but the absence now of anyone to help him to the exit in the event of darkness. Later, his blood black with caffeine and whiskey, he swears on the Quran, Bible, and little book of complete bollocks to be more from now on than an instrument in any woman's orchestra. And suddenly all you can see is the promise for him of a long future of cough syrup and scoreless draws as he goes on to share various caravans with guys with mad grey heavy metal hair and perhaps once a year have an out of underpants experience with a woman twice his age. By midnight you're about to tell him you'd rather wake up with the late Leonid Brezhnev than have to listen to any more of this. But at the last moment keep your sympathetic head, because, as the proverb says, mock not, for tomorrow you too may have your bare arse turned to the sun. into short call with that. Bit of an answer to people who could always come up with brilliant reasons for doing nothing somewhere else. Better to risk it and see if the Missouri woods really are, as you say, patrolled by snakes with AK-47s hissing, or you from somewhere else, than spend my halcyon decades whispering down the usual street towards the plate of ham sandwiches in the room above the local pub. And I am finally called on to give the few crumpled regulars a rousing rendition of I Did It Their Way, a little something to get me by. When I was 15, I decided that I wanted to change the world, which isn't that rare really. But I now think, look at it from my father's point of view, that I cannot imagine anything worse than having a 15-year-old like I was. And this is kind of an exaggerated look at that relationship. It's simply called Dad. On yellow evenings in a country which no longer exists, we ignore each other over deceased cups of coffee until I shatter the pristine silence, announce my opposition to the trickle-down theory, or the concept of right and wrong as you understand it, or say all things considered, this would be a good time for the world to end. Sometimes you bark back that in my world without rules, Ian Brady would probably tour Europe, promoting his autobiography, Everybody Gets What They Deserve. The author would be available afterwards to take children from the audience, and never mind the big opinions, with my leadership, the only job I'm fit for, in a country which no longer exists, is meeting men in hotels for small change. But mostly you abscond to give some innocent shrub a skinhead haircut, allow me to keep contradicting myself until I find out what it is I'm trying to say. This is kind of a look at another angle of the same issue, and it's called My Militant Tendency. It's 1982, and I know everything. Hippies are people who always end up asking Charles Manson to sing them another song. I'd rather be off putting some fascists through glass door archways, but being 15, have to mow the lawn first. Last year, Liverpool meant football. Now it's the Petrograd of the British Revolution. Instead of masturbation, I find socialism. While others dream of businessmen dealing investments, I promise to abolish double chemistry tax the minute I become commissar. In all of this, there is usually a leather jacket involved. I tell cousin Walter and his lovely new wife Elizabeth to put their aspirations in their underpants and smoke them. Watch my dad's life become a play, sit down in anger. Someone I know said to me about 5 or 6 years ago that they were thinking of running for the Dáil. I said, gee, that's very interesting. And this is, they didn't anyway, thank God. But this is a look at what might have happened if they had. From a short poem called Political Oblivion. The 50 votes you got may have been the political equivalent of a woman whispering, is it him yet? But it's long since been and gone, but you still smile like an up-and-coming congressman sitting in for a closet with the governor of Ohio's wife. Allegedly, JFK was seen emerging from a closet in the White House with the then governor of Ohio's wife. Okay, this is not a comic poem. It's a look at one of those people. You know, we have all these partnership boards and all of that are set up, and they kind of do-gooder, sinister bureaucrat type. And it's called, usually with ex-paramilitary links, usually, page from the diary of an officially approved person. By day, your new blonde hair and state-sponsored smile are twin planks in the government's anti-poverty strategy. As you put on your enthusiasm and treat another seminar to an orgy of flip charts, then played mayors and ministers up against each other over the much anticipated beef stroganoff. No one noticing the names being underlined in red in the twilight polypolypula of your mind. By night, you sit alone in a mansion called Equality and listen to the moans from some far basement of those whose nervous hands question this expense account, that clerk's timely suicide, openly defied both conference rows of otherwise unanimous applause. As you move on and kind of grow up, or just grow cranky maybe, you notice that there are some people that if the world was fixed tomorrow morning, it's not going to be, but if it was, they would fall apart because there would be nothing to protest to that. It's kind of like there are many Groves, and I think that might be one of them, and this is on that subject, from Grosvenor Square to here. Sentences that run on and on like a hacking toss. Exclamation marks which can be seen coming a mile off as you load them onto your machine gun tongue and fire. You poke that suitcase full of broken old slogans all the way from Grosvenor Square to here. Your imagination now a cluttered basement. By the time you sit down, no one will be in any doubt. If rigor mortis could talk, this is how it would sound. Another serious poem that you'll like nothing of it again. I read a very strange article about the situation in Darfur in the Sudan in the Socialist Worker newspaper, and it says several times, it said in this article, it's problematic to describe this as genocide. And I thought, right, what that means is it's Muslims killing other Muslims. You can't make the US out to be the bogeys in this case. So it's suddenly very complicated, whereas America was feeling that you'd be out there with your little signs. So I wrote this poem that has not a word of my own in it. It's all eyewitness accounts and quotes from that article as well. And it's called Firewood, but it's apparently the most dangerous time is when women go out. Gather firewood as they have to every day, every morning. Firewood. A bone field 50 meters by 50. It's problematic to describe this as genocide. I gather firewood at 8 o'clock in the morning. My son clings to my dress. Men in uniforms with military insignia stop their car and throw him into a fire. Then five of them, one after the other. I am paralyzed. It's problematic to describe this as genocide. The solution is not military intervention. We demand the US keep its hands off Sudan. Children start jumping out windows. When the Janjaweed come into the school, the police begin firing. Everyone, mainly babies and the elderly, falls down. I am standing on bodies. A military barrack, no bathroom. People stay still, suffering their wounds. People stay still. No bathroom, a military barrack. I am standing on bodies. Fall down. Mainly babies and the elderly. Everyone. The police begin firing. When the Janjaweed come into the school, children start jumping out windows. The solution, not military intervention. The US keep its hands off Sudan. We demand. It's problematic to describe this as genocide. I am paralyzed. One after the other. Five of them. They stop their car and throw him into a fire. Men in uniforms with military insignia. My son clings to my dress. At 8 o'clock in the morning, I gather firewood. It's problematic to describe this as genocide. A bone field, 50 meters by 50. Much closer to home. I got married about 2.5 years ago. Nearly 3 years ago coming up. I should know that. And this is a poem on if she knew what she was getting into, would she have done it? slightly exaggerated, I'm not actually this bad. She considers his proposal. Yes is a place where it's okay, but in parties are always bring your own toilet brush affairs. But on bank holiday Mondays, he talked to her through the bathroom door about the phone bill. That loyalty might mean being dragged before a tribunal to answer questions about a scam perpetuated by him. That his wallet is crammed with membership cards at clubs that threw him out. That her shoes have been stolen by rodents. Yes, it's a place. It's okay. But he must tell her once more how when he was small, his mother would sometimes soak the whole family in Dettol, but he never overcame his fear of cottage cheese. So when things go wrong, he turns to her and says, just because I'm kicking imaginary people in the testicles doesn't mean we can't hold hands. That each morning he tells her, if you were just a pair of eyebrows, I'd still be here looking at you. Yes is a place. It's okay. Now this then is another rather sort of similar subject in a way. I read somewhere it says that women have a civilizing effect on men, and I think we don't want to tell them that too loudly in case they abuse it against it, but I think we know that when we get beyond a certain age, that's true. And this is called absence. When you go, I'm a boy lost in enormous shorts. The news remains untranslated. Chinese Muslims and lesbian bishops. Breakfast is a bowl of socialist standing lies. My old pal truth, welcome, is a hot coffee in the bowls. Each morning I write offering Osama bin Laden a pact, but he keeps not answering my letters. Then browse my favorite website, cats that look like Hitler. When you go, childhood is a field full of hay that was never that golden. The story so far announced to a short history of hardly anything when you go. This is maybe another aspect of the marriage thing, maybe, but it's also a satire on hypochondria. I'd be a very bad doctor, I think. This is called Kaiser Sose. That does not frighten me. The mother-in-law mentioned in this poem is obviously not mine. And Kaiser Sose, of course, was the figure from the film The Usual Suspects, the kind of devil god figure who I think turned out in the end to be Kevin Spacey. Kaiser Sose does not frighten me. When your mother walks in on us with her swollen arches, her irritable bowel and pernicious anemia, her tales of endless samples taken in endless jars, and is no sooner in the door than there she sits with a medical dictionary, moving her fingers lovingly across its pages. Colostomy, phallectomy, bubonic plague. I sometimes think, while they're not looking, I should make a run for it. Could be at the airport before anyone missed me. Would manage somehow, try my hand at anything. Perhaps by the taxi in Islamabad, her goats in Mongolia, the last heard of, running rackets in Atlantic City before vanishing off the face of the earth. Because Kaiser Sose does not frighten me, but I'm scared to death of her. How are we doing on time? Okay, this is a quieter poem, really. It's kind of about people that you used to know, and you realize are very concerned with you still, but you can kind of turn and look at that from the other angle. Word from the other country. Where you've gone, the air may be a Mardi Gras of insects and pollen, but where I live, it's winter, world without ice cream and men. I make do with soda bread and spend long evenings Googling you. Most days I know it was nothing personal. I was the hobby you took up to pass the worst years of the recession. And when the sky comes down, I still rush out to take your favorite t-shirt in out of the rain. Okay, this is So talking about a guy I worked with briefly and notoriously, one Friday afternoon the wages checked all down. He waddled in about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was still a little bit 4 o'clock. And he said, how will this affect the weekend? Because I thought, given that he was meant to be the manager, was an interesting approach to these things. I'm sure when they put them in those day-long conferences in hotels, that is just the way that it... he then proceeded to draw up an anti-war sign, which I thought was for the demo, which was happening there. But they definitely didn't suggest that. And a friend of mine said, you know, there are most of us wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and all of our problems seem that bit worse, that bit more acute and unsolvable than they will at 9 o'clock in the morning with a few hours sleep. There are rare people, though, who wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and think, God, I'm doing something brilliant, I'm in time. And there, from there come the, I think, the pedantic poetries, and maybe the George W. Bushes as well, and this guy. Portrait of the boss shaking hands with himself. So busy shaking hands with yourself, you miss and children laughter, the universe warning you. Never get it when psychics leave post-it saying, gone to live in North Korea, or suggest your strategy for the next shareholders meeting should be to do a little interpretive dance to Fanny Be Tender With My Love by the Bee Gees, or spot all around you briefcases fondly remembering poverty, Spanish whiskey on collapsing afternoons, and dreaming that once more they wave you off on holiday of a white minibus going off the motorway, a Hawaiian shirt finally quiet. We went on our honeymoon to St. Petersburg in Russia, it was like going to New York, it's very strange. If you land there, you realize you've never seen this place, really. But you've seen it many times on television, looking at the steam coming out of the vents in New York, and in St. Petersburg, the gates of the Winter Palace. There's something really strange about walking to that, because you've seen them in James Bond films and Eisenstein films, which are an odd combination. And we overheard this woman saying to her husband that the Smolny Institute, which is one of the tourist places, is a place where someone did something once, but now it's a girls' school. It was a girls' school, a very posh girls' school before the Russian Revolution, and then it was the Bolshevik headquarters. So this poem is kind of a snapshot of that visit. St. Petersburg seems August. The small white cat in the Winter Palace courtyard is barely all the summer she can get, as a woman takes time out from her big loud ice cream to tell what looks like her husband that Smolny Institute is a place where someone did something once, but now it's a girls' school. Later, an old man plays chess against himself at a bus stop on Nevsky Prospect, as the guidebook reliably informs us that above the hotel opposite sits a plaque, Leningrad, City of Heroes, but all we can see is a Coca-Cola sign, and on the other bank of the Neva, as the day whitens, a man whose role in his own Bolshevik fairy tale has long since earned him a place on the FBI's least wanted, waits at the window of Lenin's study, and the disposable cameras immortalizing tech fumbles in his pocket like a best man who's mislaid that speech and gazes meaningfully into the past. At the time, I didn't come over, but about 15 years ago, this friend of mine rang me up and said to me, the social welfare has refused to give him any money for various reasons, but I have an appeal. It's completely pointless. We're going to go along, I can bring a friend with me. We're going to go along, and we're going to give this guy dog abuse. So I said, This is in my period of retirement between changing the world politically and becoming a poet, which is a pretty interesting and varied career. And so I said, Grant, spend about 5 years, and we went along and kind of accused your man of being a cog in a legal machine and, you know, all the different kind of people like you, Auschwitz, you know, children, everything. Completely ridiculous and over the top. But 5 years ago, I was going home by the Spanish Arch in Galway, and I see in the distance a guy with a bottle, kind of down where the drinker, the street drinkers would be. I look over the road, Jesus, no. Cross over. It's your man. It's the social welfare officer. Then, 2 years ago, or is it this year actually? I think it was this year, at the Court's Grand Slam in Galway, there was a guy kind of interjecting, the drunk, interjecting down the front. Now I couldn't see who it was, and it was nearly told to get out, and it's the same guy. I thought, what the fuck happened there? Anyway, this is, I'm kind of looking at someone, how the hell does someone who was obviously the pillar of respectability end up where he ended up, and this is obviously all invented. Room overlooking the lake. You there in the back road heard from right, class of 1975, back when the world was busy telling long jokes in the college bar, or chanting slogans in support of the Bolivian tree people, or the mothers of the disappointed, the one who knew where he was going and went, smooth as mustard being spread across an old man's head to that civil service pension, and all those lunchtime spent munching onion sandwiches and watching as the dough hues came and went like weeds. The rest of us still skulking on and off various trains, or forever crouched behind the couch the day the rent man came round, and you already a man, any 40-year-old woman would have been proud to bring home to her mother that briefcase guaranteed to make it through all those evening streets in pairs of slippers to a priest one day whispering, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, life not changed, merely ended. This is what, to a man, we predicted. Not the gin for dinner, the whiskey across your cornflakes, the wife giving up on you the day you started putting hard-boiled eggs under the mattress just to see what would happen. Later, you looking like death cools down as you stood on the street corner crooning, lovely tender. And now being led into the back of ambulance ranting, long live the rotten old consensus, and going off through the pale hatchet-faced afternoon to another basket-weaving class, another game of dominoes in that room overlooking the lake. Four more. I think of this as an anti-misery poem. So I read it in the US, and the students in the audience said, how is that really anti-misery? I don't see it. I just see the misery. But it's meant to be a satire on feeling sorry for yourself. Your ideal Friday night. I hear what you say, but as once again you sit with your backside buried in that chair there, your face like months and months of pent-up rain, falling on the same day. Can you blame me for thinking that deep down you'd probably prefer another evening in with a local rag? Man who once crossed Little Hampton High Street did absolutely nothing yesterday to 100 hot nights with Samantha Mumba. Your ideal Friday night is watching the mildew advance across an old coat as you wait for your bones to go find the cold. I'll read the last two poems, but they're too depressing to leave you on, so then I have another one. This one is about the way that, it's kind of the opposite of that I was saying, that maybe you'll be in heaven before the devil knows you're dead. It's kind of, I've always thought, almost certainly in heaven would be Dana, maybe Daniel O'Donnell. The list of people likely to be down below has to mean that that's where the best party would be. So this is looking at that in a tongue-in-cheek way. Last Testament. Whether I leave this world peacefully, surrounded by respectable nephews and voluptuous nieces, to go rowing at 4 a.m. in the prison hospital, come what may, let no black crow sit squawking by my bed, but pin this sign above my head, this fucker here does not repent, would do the same again and worse. Yes, when I have gasped my final gasp, let Satan clap his hands and cry, at last, may I be down below, having dinner with Tricky Dicky, hearing dirty jokes with old Al Haig, before my father, what's his name, realizes I'm gone. This is, I've always had a kind of a feeling of a hospital that if you go into them, you never leave. I haven't had much experience with them. So oddly, after having written this poem, I ended up being made writer and resident at Murray Park Hospital in Galway, which is odd. I've never ever read this poem in the hospital. In the back gate and past the giant red brick chimney, through a whispering door to where a woman with a skilled smile takes your details of the desk and sends you, a small boy again, into that world of tin men in dressing gowns. A corridor you go down for blood or cancer. A toilet where from the ceiling hangs a cord you pull to tell them it's time you were driven away from here by a blank man in a hearse with no license plates. I actually saw a hearse with no license plates outside the hospital in Galway. Well, there's a line to a poem there, somehow. And this is actually an optimistic poem, I think. It's a kind of a, one of those days, but where everything goes wrong, and all you can do is write it off and begin again. And it's called Today, and I'll finish on this one. Thanks very much for coming out on the bank holiday. And thanks to Paul for the invitation and the organisation for the band and the holiday. Today, when the morning the letter which should never have been sent, the afternoon the fat man sitting on all your best laid plans, when all day long you're the wrong hand on the wrong knee with an act of turning nothing into even less, and the woman sitting next to you suddenly runs out screaming, what can you do but close the curtains on all this? Both will step out of the shower tomorrow, put on your sombrero as usual, and run laughing up Shop Street in the rain, today turning out to have been just someone else's horrible.